Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Okay, it's a cloudy day here in New York City. It's cold. It's the end of November, so it's cold. What do you expect? I'm indoors in a nice warm room here, and I'm about to do a very good show. I got a good show today, my entertainment. Here we see. There was this show entitled Zanny's Furry Friends that I attended. It was a fundraiser for this non-for-profit organization committed to rescuing companion animals from New York City shelters. And it was an evening of just a slew of singers and instrumentalists and singers that are funny as opposed to anybody doing stand-up comedy. And it included my friend and Broadway star Sarah Rice. But I started making other friends, plus I found a friend from years ago that I hadn't seen. It's Dana Lord. I keep saying Dana because there's a Dana on the football team, and it took me a long time to call her Dana because I got so used to hearing Dana. Yes, but anyway, so Dana Lord is going to be our first guest, and then we have Steve Herbst, who's going to whistle, and then we have Barbie Horowitz as our guest. So I have to first, of course, the message from our, how the sponsor goes and where we are. Here we go. Oh, yes, I wish I had one.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy tale brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
You can get these brownies. www.brownies.com. Now they have they got cookies, they have they're bars, they have, but they're not brownie bars, they're blondie bars, and then they have these truffles, which, oh god, they're taking like the small brownie and then dipping it into the dark chocolate. And, I'm sorry. Dana is here, and she's probably listening to this and
I'm hungry.
Dying to have one. God, these, I know, I have, listen, I, and then I get these brownies from them, and it's like, all right, I'll, little by little, I'll have one. This was so good, I'll have another. someone needs to say that was Esther. Okay, unit 10. Okay, those were my rubber chickens. At least they got to say hello to you.
Oh, thank you.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Good. Just
good.
Great. Listen, so, since you were emceeing the show, or co-hosting the show.
Co-hosting with Sydney Meyer, who books Don't Tell Mamas in Manhattan.
Okay, so that's what he does, but he's also an entertainer too, right?
Very funny entertainer. Very, very, he's excellent. and loved.
Oh, okay.
By all.
Well, I forgot what he did that night.
I don't remember the song, but usually it's a funny song.
Okay, I probably have it listed in the. I have it. Did I blog this yet? Oh yeah, I blogged it, so it's on my blog. I got to the blog point versus part in the paper. So tell me what you know. I have to ask you a question. This will help me. Have you ever seen me perform?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you have. Because I still think we met as extras on a set.
No, we met somewhere you were performing.
Okay.
Yes, and you were funny.
But it was so many years ago, and who cares, but
right.
We met up again.
Right.
So tell me what you've been doing, what have you been doing?
In the last 25 years?
Yeah.
Waiting for your call. What else? I thought you would never call. Okay,
Did you always live in Queens?
No. I lived in Manhattan. I was born in Manhattan.
And then
my family, we moved to Florida for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then we went to Long Beach, lived in Long Beach.
Long Beach.
The island. Long Beach, Long Island.
Oh, okay.
Right. And then now I'm in beautiful Sunnyside, which is Queens.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. Which is, I don't know, it's Sunnyside, Long Island City. It's, I think, a block difference something.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, they still consider it sort of Long Island City because that's the postal area.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Broken down, it's a postal area. So.
Well, I do get mail for both. Sunnyside and Long Island City, so. But.
Oh, okay. But never Queens. No one ever writes Queens, New York.
No.
You're not allowed to.
You could do it, but Queens is 6 times bigger than Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so it could be all over Queens, you know, where in Queens. Queens is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
So let's see.
I did Grind on Broadway with Ben Vereen. I haven't seen you. Oh, I did an off-Broadway show called Aunt Chooch's Birthday, which was on 47th Street at Sophia's, which is downstairs. I don't where they had Tony and Tina's wedding. And,
okay.
What else did I do? I did a show out in Long Island called Philomena, where I paid a 75-year-old grandmother.
Oi,
and also they. And then I worked the mountains for years and years before that.
The Catskills.
The Catskills. And then after that, I did Japan for about 5-6 months. And all the islands.
How did Japan come in? I mean, had you like?
Are you ready for this?
Oh, I think I'll get a booking.
I was working. No, it's like that. I was up in the mountains, and this agent came over and he said, "Do you want to go to Japan?" And as a joke, I said, "It's lucky for you, I am packed." As a joke. So I come home, and I get a letter with a contract, and I was booked for like a month. I stayed 5. Because I kept getting rebooked. I went Korea, Osaka, Tokyo, all over the place. And I kept getting rebooked. I went there alone. It was wonderful. A lot of fun. And I had a great time, except for one place.
Which?
Osaka. I was in Osaka, and I went for rehearsal. They wouldn't let me go to the hotel first. I had to go to rehearsal first. And I had my 5 suitcases, which brought into this little place. And it was a 17-piece band. I was tired. I never sang. I just said, 1, 2, 3, 4. And they played. And, I'd have got to thank you. And next. And I finished the rehearsal, which I never sang, and the owner came over to me and says, "Oh, Miss Ology, you stink." I said, "I haven't done anything yet." "Oh, oh, you haven't? Oh, we don't like what you did." I said, "Do anything." It was the day of my birthday. So I said, "Well, let me do one show, and if I really am bad, you can just let me go." But it turned out they apologized. I said, "I can't bomb at a rehearsal. You know, I mean, I can bomb at a show, but not at a rehearsal." But I stayed there 2 weeks. That was great. And I was doing the Iguana as a variety show for 3 years.
I have to ask you a question. So when you're doing shows like in, you know, like Japan or whatever, does everybody understands the language?
Well,
or?
In some places they understood. In Korea, they did. Everybody understood except the band. The band didn't speak English. So, and they were horrible. The Korea, it was horrible, the band. I think it was the first act to ever work this new hotel. It was the new Chosan. And so every night I would say, "Let's hear it for the curtains," and the band would get up and take a bow. I mean, I could say, I said, "This is the worst band I ever heard," and smiled, and they got up
with
and
a
took
smile.
A bow. I had fun. Listen, you got to make everything fun.
Oh, yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, so now the last 3 years I've been doing the Iguana on 54th Street. And
What is it? Is it a nightclub?
Iguana is, yes. It's a club upstairs. And they have, I had a band and I had a variety show of which I produced and booked. The singers, comics. I love comics. Singers, comics, magic acts, a real variety show. I was like the Ed Sullivan of the Iguana. And, oh, you know, during the holidays, we had like, you know, I celebrate everything. You name it, I'm there. So we had Christmas. But before Christmas, we had Hanukkah at the Iguanica. And it's a Mexican place, Mexican American. So everybody's wishing everybody a happy Chinooka. They had no idea what it was, but they celebrated anyway. It was fun. And I know you're gonna interview Bobby Horowitz.
Yeah.
Who I met years ago. And a friend of mine said, Bobby Horowitz had a partner, it was Horowitz and Spector, and they were songwriters. And they wrote me a lot of material. They're terrific. I don't know if
Did
you know
they,
that.
So, she said to me, she wrote a song for you? She wrote,
she
song
wrote a couple
for
of songs for me. They're great.
I
had to do was give her the subject.
Really?
So one song was about facelifts. And one was about shopping, which is my life. I love to shop.
I don't suppose I could get you to sing one of them, can I?
No. You have a band there?
No. Not exactly.
You don't have a band?
No. So
I'm
in
shocked.
Other words, you can't sing a cappella?
I don't think so.
Okay. Do you have a CD? Are you recording anything? I mean,
no.
Like just the.
No, I just.
So how do I get?
Well, when
how
I'm
do
doing
get
stuff,
this on the air, I need to
whoever wants to come, can go on Facebook.
Yeah.
And look up Dana Lorge, and I always have the events I'm doing or what I'm doing, and they can look that up and come, whatever it is. I'm
okay.
Going to be January.
Yes.
Barry Levitt and I are going to be at the Iridium, which Iridium is a fabulous jazz club. It's on 51st and Broadway. You know, on the corner of Stardust Diner. It's part
oh,
of
okay.
The, and downstairs is a jazz club, which is really a wonderful club with great food and a fun place. And it will be the Barry Levitt Trio and moi. And we're going to do that in January, but I don't have the dates yet.
Okay. So in other words, I still have, because what I'm doing, I'm trying to start to review people at nightclubs now.
Oh,
and
God.
I didn't realize there were so many.
You can go on. You know, people come to New York and, of course, they go to the theater because that's what New York is, theater. But
right.
as far as cabaret goes, there are so many fun things that's less expensive than Broadway that is so much fun to go to. Like you went at the Laurie Beachman. I don't know if you ate there, but the food is good because it's actually a restaurant.
Right.
And there's performances. Every night somewhere, there's this beautiful club, the Metropolitan Club, which is on 22nd Street between 5th and 6th. And they have shows every night. And Don't Tell Mamas every single night, every night. So there are so many places to go in Manhattan. It's incredible. With performers that you may have not heard of, but they're fabulous. They're New York, there is no other place to me as New York. I love it.
Even better than Japan, huh?
Oh, I saw, yes. It's a nice place to visit. Japan is expensive. Wow.
Well, it's funny because I forgot the area. What's the place that had the earthquake? The area?
I wasn't there.
I forgot the...
A tsunami? No.
They were emailing me as a travel writer, asking if I would come out there. They'd pay for the trip. I'm going, A, I don't even care if they pay for the trip. I'm not going. And B, the thought of how many freaking hours on the plane.
Right. Oh, my God. It's a long plane ride. Long. I went back a few times. I mean, I love the Orient. I love the people. I love the Orient. I love the prices of clothes. You can have things made, you know, Hong Kong especially. Oh, my God. And Bangkok. You know, you tell me you're leaving. You have shoes made and clothes made. And they are experts at what they do. Wonderful.
Wow.
The Chinese food is not... We have American Chinese food.
Yeah, I know. Unless you go to...
You go to a hotel, Chinese food is so totally different than what we eat. And I love Chinese food.
What about have you... I mean, I don't compare things to Chinatown anymore. I compare things to going to downtown Flushing.
Downtown Flushing,
or
yes.
As I now call it, same spelling, but I call it Flushing.
Flushing sounds good.
Yes.
but an hour later,
yeah,
you're in Flushing.
But have you compared it to like going to the restaurants in downtown Flushing?
No, I haven't.
I'm curious. Oh, okay.
No, but I have a friend who loves, I mean, that's kind of food. She loves it. And she eats there all the time and loves it. And I haven't gone with her. I should.
All right. I'll talk to you later about this because I did find a restaurant that would be absolutely great for you and I to go to. Are you into dim sum?
Yes.
Okay. I'll tell you about it afterwards. Anyway,
okay.
Getting back to this. Well, I want to get to this. Why did you do this thing, Zanny's Furry Friends?
First of all, I love animals. I'm an animal lover. And number two, I was asked.
You asked?
I just...
Dana, you're busy this night. Hi.
No, actually, she asked me a while ago to do this. And I just... You know, a lot of these dogs and cats and animals are being slaughtered for no reason. And these people save them. They take care of them. If they're sick, they take care of them, and then they find them beautiful homes. And I don't know. It's really sad what they... A lot of people should not have children or animals if they're not going to take care of them.
That's true.
And It's just, it's very sad. I mean, to me, animals are like, you know, they're, especially dogs, they're very needy. Cats are very independent, but they take care of all animals, other animals too, besides
yes.
Basically dogs and cats, but they do other animals. I'm not sure who, but they do.
Do you have any? When you do shows, are you doing any part like stand up type stuff,
yes.
Or you just go right into? Oh, you do.
Yes, I did the Actors Temple on last Saturday, and I did stand up.
Oh, what did you go into? Like what?
Well, I talked about my my last husband. My couple of husbands, but my last one.
Okay.
Actually, that's probably why I'm not married today. Because when I was married to him, and I did jokes about his hair and his, you know, for example, you know, I would say, that he wanted children, you know, he wanted to carry on the family name, Schmuck. But, you know, he you know, I was married. It seemed like an eternity. It really did seem. Now I'm going with somebody for years, but we have this Hasidic relationship. He goes home and I go home. So it's great.
When you said Hasidic relationships, I thought maybe you do it with the hole in the sheet.
I didn't say I was married, did I?
Right. So what are your topics like? What's the topic now that you kind of go into?
I talk about dieting.
Dieting. Give me something funny to.
Which I'm on all the time, dieting. Well, I went on that 7-day sex diet, you know?
No, what is that?
You have sex for 7 days and 7 nights. And if you don't lose any weight, who cares? It is a pain, though. The dieting is really a... Oh, my God. I just I look at food, I think I gain weight. Breathe it in. I like food. I like clothes. I talk about shopping. I talk about... mostly men, and there's so many topics, and right now I can't think of the other topics, but...
You can't think of one topic to share with us?
Well, I did share.
No, I mean... have you started thinking about this... The thing that they have, the for Niagara, what they call Viagra for the brain. Did you hear about this?
No.
It's a drug that came out. I forgot the name of it, and they're calling it Viagra for the brain. It was this whole thing supposed to like keep you really totally focused, and people could stay up for hours and hours. It can really do. You know, so I looked at it, and we're comedians. What do you think? First thing I said, heads up. I mean, they're calling Viagra for the brain. And the first thing I think about is, will that make people give better head?
God.
That's all I can think about. But it can run with this thing. I mean, Viagra for the brain, God.
My boyfriend and I, we tried to see Alice.
Yeah,
and you heard if you get an erection for more than 4 hours, you're supposed to call your doctor.
Yeah.
Well, we tried it, and it's fabulous. It just we did not know what to do with ourselves for 3 hours and 93 minutes. But otherwise, it works. But those. I never heard of Viagra for the brain.
Yeah, that's what they're calling it. You got to check it out because you got to make fun of it.
I will. I'm running. I want to stay up for days. For what? So I can be on my computer with 7,000 emails.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's funny. Last night I had 600 emails. I had about 700 emails. I went down to like 5. I went to sleep. I got home. I got up. I looked at my computer. 830 emails. You know, you can't leave the house.
Yeah.
Did you get my email? Ooh, wet. You know, it's, oh, my God.
But one thing I don't, maybe you can explain something to me. Why is it with that commercial with the, what is it, Vialis, whatever the hell it is, that the thing? Why are the people sitting in, looks like bathtubs? They always show
a
man and a woman.
I know.
In the backs to us, and they're sitting, each sitting next to each other, each
I
in
think
the bathtub.
That's Cialis.
Cialis, yeah.
And I think the reason is so they're clean when they finally fool around. I don't know.
I
it's
keep
a clean
looking at
commercial.
Going,
they want it
maybe,
clean.
I'm saying to myself, maybe because I'm a lesbian and I don't know what that means.
Well, now you do.
I mean, what? Does he have it? Once he gets the erection, they can go into the same tub?
I guess so. They can join in their soap and everything. It's very unexciting. No, I don't know really.
Okay.
I guess it's a clean look, clean sounding.
Yeah,
you know,
I
it's
okay.
The,
I thought just maybe somebody else.
Well, the minute you use Cialis, the sun shines, and you're in the bathtub in the middle of the beach, and everything is so romantic with the sun coming down.
I'm not. I mean,
and your legs coming up. It's just, nice, you know.
Who the fuck has two bathtubs side by side anywhere?
Very rich, the Irish people.
I mean, it's like, what? Two bathtubs?
You're getting silly.
I can understand this. Two
You're
bathtubs.
You're getting silly.
That if they had two bathtubs that were erect or something.
They're little tiny bathtubs, though. You got to be, like, a very short.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
Do you notice that their legs and everything is out? Their arms, you know, and they're holding hands? Bathtub to bathtub?
Yeah.
I think it's so romantic, personally. What subject did you talk about? When you did comedy, what subject did you talk about?
Oh, I didn't. I didn't talk about subjects. When I did comedy, I did all characters. I did scenes from The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
I did, you know, Jerry Lewis. I did, you know, stuff like that.
But the show that I just did, Marilyn Michaels was on, and she did The Wizard of Oz as, all different characters. She did Liza, Dr. Ruth. It was really funny. Very good.
Oh, that's funny.
I haven't seen Marilyn Michaels in a long time. She was terrific. And so was Tony Robbins.
I did The Wizard of Oz for her driving her someplace.
You did?
Yes,
oh.
I did. I'll have to tell you the story. It was like absolutely the weirdest thing that she called me on the phone and said to me, I have to do an interview on WLIW.
Mm-hmm.
Can you pick me up and take me out there? And I'm going, thinking to myself, me? Why
me?
Why is she calling me? It was.
It's amazing when you have a car, you have more friends than you can imagine. You know?
Yeah, but it was like, and normally I would have said no, but I thought it was, I guess maybe so absurd, you know what I mean?
Right,
I mean, this is not somebody I see every day or anything.
You probably never see her.
With you or in touch with her that much or whatever, and I'm going, what about her publicist? What about whatever kind of thing?
Right, I don't know.
I don't know. It was weird, but anyhow.
The other one that we had a lot of times at the Iguana who is beyond wonderful is Marilyn May. Oh, my God. She's going to be at the Metropolitan Room on New Year's. She is amazing. She is in her 80s. She's singing better than she ever did. She's just an adorable woman. Just fabulous.
I'm going to see her. I guess she's also doing some more shows, I guess, other than
She lives in Kansas.
Oh.
And she comes to New York. She stays a couple of months. She did Feinstein. She did this place, that place, and she's, and then she goes back to Kansas to regroup, I guess, and get more clothes. She's also like me. She's a clothes horse.
Okay.
And she's, she really is, you know. I mean, I'm running out of room. I mean, I have a big apartment, but it's filled with clothes. Now it's filled with Hanukkah and Christmas gifts, which I've been shopping for the last couple of days. Only 30 gifts. I'm exhausted. The holidays used to be more fun, but these gift-giving parties, you know, you can't go without anything, and I'm going to a Hanukkah party, and I'm going to 5 Christmas parties. At least I join. I'm a joiner.
Oh, good.
Whatever the holiday is, I'm there.
Oh, that's good.
On December 10th, if you're not busy, there's a Mac party for Christmas. Mac is Manhattan Association of Cabaret Performers. And that should be fun. It's downtown. I think it's called Elmo's. I don't know where that is. I have the address.
Elmo's,
but,
huh?
Well, Elmo's.
That's a problem now, isn't it?
Hmm?
The guy, I said that's a problem now. Isn't that with the guy with the puppeteer thing? Wasn't that Elmo was the name of the puppet? That
I think
did?
You're right, yeah.
Yeah.
But this
having nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do at all.
No.
Not one thing to do with it.
Yeah. Elmo's, okay. I just scribbled that down.
Well, I'll call you later when I find out the... I have it on my computer, which I'm not near, so...
Oh, okay.
All right.
So what is the next thing you're going to do?
The next thing I'm going to do, the Iridium, and if anybody wants to see this fabulous variety show, just go to Facebook and put in Dana Lorge. And
okay.
I have all the things I'm doing. Right now, I'm shopping.
Okay. Well,
because
I think...
shopping is my entire life. But I don't show up when people go out of business. Especially flea markets, you know.
I think I got Steve calling in right now.
Oh,
was
you do?
I? Yeah,
all
Steve.
Right. Happy whistling.
Okay, Dan, I'll call you after the show.
All right. Wonderful
all right.
Talking to you.
Okay. Take
Thank
it
you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay. Well, just to introduce you. Go ahead and whistle something for us.
Whistle something? We're talking about Zany's Furry Friends, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, there's a tune called The Whistler and His Dog. Maybe you heard of that.
No.
Yes? It goes like this.
Song from
Officer Joe Bolton.
That was the theme for what?
It was a kids show called Officer Joe Bolton.
That's what it was from.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the. I guess my head is thinking the kids with the small kids, the young kids, the Rascals?
Little Rascals?
Little Rascals?
Well, I don't know if they, I don't know that, I don't think so. But Officer Joe Bolton was a kids show, and they used that theme song.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that, too. I remember watching that, though I couldn't tell you, like, you know, a chapter or an episode. So how did you get into whistling, by the way? As a form of entertainment?
Well, there are lots of sub questions in there. How I got into whistling and how I got into entertaining with whistling and how I became professional at whistling. But it started because my dad used to whistle. He used to whistle around the house and in the car, and it kind of caught my fancy. So I started practicing whistling as a serious musical instrument, as an art, when I was 7 years old. And I'd whistle to school and on my way to school, and I'd whistle on the way home. And when I got back to home, I'd go into my bedroom and close the door and put on the record player and practice whistling to the tunes so that I could mimic the instruments. And that's how I developed a 3-octave range and wound up getting compared to all kinds of different instruments like violins and trumpets and clarinets and oboes and flutes and so forth.
Well, when you say that, in other words, let's say can I hear the difference? Like if I said, you know, sound like an oboe or sound like a trumpet?
Sure.
Okay, good.
When I was a kid, the piece that I practiced with the most was Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev. And if you're familiar with the you know, the Sterling Holloway recording where he narrates, you know, talks about all the different, what's going on at the time. Sonia the duck was represented by an oboe, and the cat was represented by a clarinet, and, you know, and Sasha the bird was represented by a flute or a piccolo. So Sonia the duck was like this. Clarinet was, the cat was, and Sasha the bird was, sound familiar?
Yeah. That's cool.
And a trumpet sound would be, you know, I used to practice a lot of classical music, you know, like there's, you know, the Bach Brandenburg Concerto that I used to practice has a lot of, you know, has trumpet playing in it. Sound like instruments to you?
Yeah, it does.
I sometimes have people come up to me and they say they close their eyes when they're at a live performance, and you know, they say it sounds like a musical instrument, but they can't quite put their finger on what it is. You know, I get compared to all of the things I've been talking about. I get compared to violins. I get compared to theremin. I get compared to musical saw. Depends on the sound that I'm going for.
What do you have, like, any favorite songs?
I have lots of favorite songs. It depends on, you know, where I'm performing, you know, the audience, you know, what I think they're going to enjoy. I'll give you a case in point. I was performing one time at a nursing home, and I had a program in mind, but I noticed that a lot of the people in the audience were Russian immigrants. I could hear Russian being spoken. So I made a switch in the program, and I did Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov.
Can I hear a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
that's cool.
Thank you. I got a lot of knowing glances from the people in the audience that day because they all knew it. You know, they were very familiar with it.
So do you,
you know, when
do
I go to a nightclub,
terms,
I do different things.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do stuff like that at a nightclub.
Well, for instance, like, can you do something like really like a rock and roll song? Would you do something like that?
A rock and roll song. You want? How, would you like some Stevie Wonder?
Yeah, let's hear.
Okay, here's a little some Stevie Wonder. I'm gonna play some of my accompaniment, so it'll make it even richer. Okay.
Oh, good. Okay.
No, that's not it.
Karaoke clubs and whistle instead of sing?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Generally, I don't go to karaoke clubs.
Oh, okay.
Because I prefer, you know, to perform with live, you know, musicians.
Live
music.
As opposed to corpses. Yeah.
But, you know, like, there are occasions when I've been at a karaoke thing and yeah, I'll whistle instead of singing. I mean, I am a singer, but, you know, people want to hear the whistling.
I think that's really great. So, where let me just ask you, why did you participate in Zanny's Furry Friends? What the?
Well, I've adopted or rescued 5 dogs over the last nearly 30 years. You know, I'm devoted to and committed to the notion of rescue and finding homes for dogs, and I have a number of friends who were involved with the concerts, the programs the last few years, and I've attended as a guest in the audience, and I volunteered to perform if they would like to have me be part of the program, and this year I was delighted to have the chance to do that.
Oh, cool. So, and where are you presently performing, or what's coming up?
Well, I haven't got anything I can talk about at the moment, but I perform regularly here in Manhattan, and I certainly would like to invite your listeners to visit my website, stevethewhistler.com. You can also find me on YouTube. I also have a Facebook page, and I have a CD, which is called Broadway and Beyond, which has 15 Broadway show tunes and Danny Boy on it. If they're interested in the CD, they can find out about that on my website as well.
Actually, you'll have to send me one so I can put it up, and because I can do, you know, music, commercials, and whatever on the show. So I could always, play a clip and go and say where you're going to be or get a plug you.
Cool. By the way, apropos of Danny Boy, I was invited once to perform for Governor Pataki at the St. Patrick's Day pre-parade breakfast in the Grand Ballroom of the Waldorf Astoria with 1,500 of his nearest and dearest friends. And I was on stage with Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor Koch and Governor Pataki. And we did, all of us were on a radio show afterwards during the rest of the St. Patrick's Day. So that was a lot of fun.
That's great. Do you have any favorite places that you performed, or?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I've had the opportunity to perform on some of the, you know, grandest stages in America, including the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., and Avery Fisher Hall, Carnegie Hall, Alice Tully Hall. I performed a couple times with full symphony orchestras at Avery Fisher Hall. But, you know, I perform regularly at the Mark Janus Salon and at Et Cetera, Et Cetera on some Sunday nights. I've performed at Ashford & Simpson's Sugar Bar on West 72nd Street. I performed at the Cotton Club up in Harlem. And I've had the opportunity to perform in concert literally around the world. I did 3 concerts in Japan, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, you went to Japan, too. So did Dana.
Really? I wasn't
aware.
We weren't there at the same time, as far as I know.
I guess not.
But, you know, those are the kind of places I perform. Actually, one of my all-time favorite experiences, and it was 7 times all-time favorite, I was being interviewed on another radio show, and Les Paul called in and said he had never heard anything like it and wanted to invite me to perform with him at the Iridium on Broadway, the Iridium Jazz Club, which I heard Dana plugging something at the Iridium.
Yeah.
And I went down to the Iridium, and I met with Les and performed with him, and he invited me back 6 times. So that was a total of 7 times performing with a living legend, the late, great Les Paul.
Great. That's fabulous. By the way, you didn't go. You weren't on America's Got Talent, were you?
No, I haven't been, although they've called me a number of times. You know, I don't know what to tell you about America's Got Talent. It seems like the whistlers who've gotten on were being made fun of. It wasn't being treated, you know, seriously.
Right.
So, you know, it's an odd thing. I mean, they've called me a number of times. But I've been on quite a few television shows. I've been on the Today Show a couple of times. I've been on Good Morning America, CBS Morning Show 3 times, CBS Sunday Morning, Fox and Friends, Voice of America, the BBC in London. I mean, lots of different shows. It's been
good.
It's been very gratifying to introduce the world to the fine art of whistling, because you know, to be candid, you know, whistling is often considered a lost art. It was very big in the golden age of whistling was in the 30s, the 40s, and into the 50s, and then people started relying on you know, entertainment that was portable, like transistor radios, and of course that's all evolved into MP3 players and,
yeah, right,
you know, iPods and so forth. So, you know, people don't entertain themselves internally. They, you know, they take the entertainment around plugged into their ears, and you know, they're like a couple of generations now that really don't know about good whistling. So it's been a pleasure to let people know about whistling. You know, my favorite audiences when I go perform in concert are the seniors who remember it, and the kids who are fascinated because they never heard of such a thing. You know, so that's the reality of it.
Well, before I let you go, by the way, can we hear like one more?
Well, yeah, I've got something in mind because it's kind of appropriate with the furry friends motif.
Mm-hmm.
How about Memory from Cats?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Thank
you. Do you know, as I'm listening, do you know what's interesting with whistling? It's like, you know, when you sing, your brain may think something and then it comes out off key.
Mm.
But when you whistle, you, for some reason or other, you wind up still hitting the right notes.
Well, at the risk of sounding immodest, not every whistler is able to stay on key. Believe me.
Well, I don't mean staying on key. Well, it's like when someone sings, they may think of a note, and it's not coming out in their voice. But in whistling, it's like somehow you're manipulating your mouth, and they're coming out with the right note.
Well, I don't know if you're trying to generalize to everybody or just talking about me, but...
No, it's generalizing. I'm just saying...
I wouldn't generalize that.
You wouldn't?
And I know whereof I speak because I teach and coach whistling.
Really? Because I've always found it's like humming. It's when I found humming or whistling, I'm going, how is it the notes come out exactly the way my brain wants it to come out?
Well, you may be good. You know,
believe
me, I've heard plenty of people who couldn't stay on key whistling.
Oh, okay.
But
I don't think that it's an easy thing to do. I mean, I can't even whistle. I used to be able just to whistle the whistle, but you know. But anyway. So anyway, I appreciate that you're coming on here, and let me know where you're going to be, and I'll plug you, you know?
I appreciate that, and it's been a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. And, I invite people to visit my website, stevethewhistler.com. You can also find me on YouTube, and on my website, there are some TV commercials and radio commercials that I've done. You know, people may have heard them or seen them, but didn't realize that... I was the one doing it. And if anybody's interested in knowing more about whistling, there's a very fine award-winning documentary film that I was pleased to be featured in and narrate called Pucker Up, the Fine Art of Whistling, which can be found through Netflix. I have no financial interest in that. I'm just mentioning it. People enjoy it. It was audience favorite at a number of international film festivals.
Cool. All right, great. All right, I'll get in touch with you so I can give you the information. You can send a CD, and I'll plug some whistling.
Very good. Nice to be with you, and have a good evening.
Yes, you too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Oh, okay. Well, time for a quick commercial before my next guest. Okay, time for a commercial.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
I always love that commercial. It's so cute. Well, now it's time for our final guest on the show. Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Go introduce yourself to my audience.
Well, hello, audience. I'm Bobby Horowitz, and I am a songwriter and an image consultant, and I love doing both. The second came out of the first. I've been loving theater my whole life, writing songs since I was 8 years old. And what else would you like to know, Myrtle?
Well, it's Merle, not Myrtle, by the way.
Merle, yes.
Yeah, okay. First of all, I'm just curious, what is an image consultant?
Oh, an image consultant. Well, it came to me when I used to audition, and when I wore certain outfits, I'd always get a call back. And then I heard about this thing where they would analyze your color and style, and I thought they were my good luck outfits. And I found out they had nothing to do with luck. It was, you can learn to package yourself, like good packaging companies learn to package products so that they authentically represent the product. And when you come in looking like your authentic self, your clothes harmonize with who you are, not who anyone else is, but you, you tend to be trusted the minute you walk into a room.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and the person looking at you doesn't know what's happening. It's subliminal in their mind.
Huh. Who have you done this for?
Oh, well, I've done it for several actors. I've done it in companies. I've done it, oddly enough, more of my clients are male than female, which you wouldn't think. But I've done it for a fellow, say, who's a psychologist. And his whole world changed. And his clients, he got more clients because he looked like who he authentically really was. It has to do with color and the tone of your skin and the color of your eyes and your hair. And then style would be your body shape, your shape. Your personality gets in there too. And we tend to try to be, at least I did, I know, the style of what was in when you were a preteen.
It
kind of influences your head. Like I was always trying to be a little sweeter, a little cuter, a little more Doris Day-y. Because now you know when I was a preteen, but I was a preteen late 40s, early 50s. And in the 50s, I was trying to look like the sweet picket fence girl when the men came home from the war. They wanted that sweet-looking, the papers
said
they wanted the sweet-looking thing. We don't know what they really wanted. And I always felt a little off. I wasn't that type.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And now that I found out what, I always loved clothes. But then when I found out why, it was like, and how I could make it work so that I saved myself a lot of money. I don't shop half as much as I used to. And everything goes with everything. And it all works. And it makes life much simpler. And I have much more confidence. And I
can help other
people with that.
Well, let's just, as an example, what was somebody looking like or whatever before and then after?
Well, I don't like to pick a particular name because I usually keep, you know. Well,
who
let
you
me
do
see.
It for?
Yeah, I keep who I do it for quiet, pretty much. Well, you can go on my site and see people who have, you know, who have given me accolades for it.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just as an example to see, like, what a before and after. You don't have to say the name, but just.
Oh, right,
just,
right. Well, say you have somebody who has, who's about 5'4" tall with big round blue eyes and a roundish face and curly blonde hair. And they think that they want to look like a Cher.
Okay.
So they may dye their hair black, or they'll try to comb it very, very straight, and they'll try to wear very dramatic outfits, and they're really going to look ridiculous. I'm picking a very extreme example, but when they walk into a room, you know, they look like they were trying, rather than just showing up. And usually, even if the part calls for somebody, if you're going to an audition, and the part calls for somebody very dramatic, like Cher, and very what would we say? Cher would wear what we image consultants call the winter colors, meaning they're cool-toned, meaning there's more blue than yellow in them. They're cool-toned, they're sharp, they're bright, and they're dark. They're like ruby red and emerald green and sapphire blue and a lot of black and white. They're a dramatic palette and usually a dramatic shape, like a one-shouldered, one-sleeved thing that goes down horizontally and has a big slit skirt with very high shoes that are black. And that little blonde with the blue eyes and the curly hair doesn't match that. Are you following?
Yes.
What I'm trying to
say. So yeah. You're dealing with a combination of clothing and makeup?
Clothing and makeup, yeah.
And
accessories.
And hair.
Yeah. And then you can see you're a work of art. I really, truly believe, and I really can prove it to people because I had to have it proven to me. You know, you learn it and then you go, that we're all works of art. And we're different works of art. And you wouldn't want to frame, I don't know if you know, Picasso's Guernica. He has that very, dramatic, scary almost, black and white, cartoon-like picture of war. And you wouldn't want to frame that the same way you would frame a Botticelli Venus.
Right.
You know, the painting would look wrong in the other paintings. So think of yourself as a painting, and you're finding your frame. And then if you're going for a part that requires you to be a little different, I once saw, it was just brilliant. I was with a casting director, and I was watching the auditions, and this guy had to be the head of a construction, had to work for a construction company and be the supervisor on a thing.
Uh-huh.
And he was the most unconstruction-like looking person. He was so handsome and so classically handsome. He almost looked like... I don't know, I'm trying to think of who would be like the ideal 40s movie star. And he's supposed to be a construction guy. But it was so clever. He walked in the room with a helmet kind of thing and
uh-huh.
a clipboard, like he was going to take notes of where the people were. And it somehow made him look like he could be that work of art that would hang on their wall. You know, you can be a work of art and hang on the other guy's wall that doesn't quite fit it. It was very, very clever. And that's another thing that made me want to study this more. I figured, that's a clever guy. How do you know how to do that?
Right. Now, is there somebody like that's in the entertainment business or something that you would say, I really need that person to consult me?
Oh, a lot. But the people that need most to consult me are usually the last people who will. I find the people I get as clients, and I do get clients, the people I get already have an idea that this is an important thing and that it can make a difference. And they usually look pretty good, actually. But they come in, and sometimes I just have to tell them why they look so good so they can keep doing it. Because then they go, you know, when you get it. It's a science. It's not rocket science, but it is a science. And once they get it, actually, sometimes the classes, even though I make less dollars on the classes than I do with individual, sessions, the classes sometimes, I'm going to give it away and let people know that can have a benefit because you learn from the other people. And it's always a safe space. And when they all realize they're all good looking. I mean, you could be in a wheelchair and have one leg and that can be your fabulous look. I mean, there were works of, the Picassos bring in more than the others. And they can be pretty outrageous looking. So it's not about being what we call in society perfect, because there is no such thing, really. I know, do you know the importance of being earnest? I always use that quote. I wrote a book about this, too. And, I always use the quote where Jack, who's earnest, says to Gwendolyn, you're quite perfect, Gwendolyn, Miss Fairfax. And she looks at him, And she says, oh, I hope I'm not bad. It would leave no room for development. And I intend to develop in many directions. Because really perfect is dead. It means it's not going anywhere.
All right. Let us get to this thing that you write songs.
Yeah. That's where it all started.
Well, give me an idea. Like, for instance, like, how do you, you know, what would, let's say if I said, write me a song, what would that be? Would I give you just a subject? Or are you writing a song that personalizes me?
Well, if you need a song for you, I'd have to get to know you. I mean, now I'm hearing a lot in your voice, you know, and I can tell certain things from that. I get that you write comical, that you have a light, you know, but it still would be something that people would care about. I get that you care about people because you have this show, but it would be light. I'd have to know exactly what it is and exactly what you want it for. I mean, what is the purpose of the song?
Right. Oh, I would just do it just to have it as a, to put up on my radio show.
Right, so you want it to be like a theme for your radio show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be fun.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll discuss that. I think that would be interesting to plug you.
Well, I know a lot of, and it would plug the show, too. I mean, I know a lot of people, I've written for people in cabaret and other people sing my songs, and I used to do a cabaret act with a woman that I wrote most of the songs with. Now I also write with other people and sometimes on my own. And they're not all comic. I mean, most of the songs, people think of me as comedy because those are the ones I sing. But I do have some ballads, and I wrote some ballads with her, and other people are singing with them, and I'm thrilled that they're singing them. I sing them so other people should sing them.
Oh, good. I understand you wrote songs for Dana Loge.
I did write songs. Well, Dana Loge, I mean, when she sings my song, my heart just goes, yay, because she is funny and she gets it. And we did write songs for her. And one of the things, this is when I was writing with Sharon Chapeau, who was called Spectre. That's her last name. So we were Horowitz and Spectre. And we would go around with her, with Dana, and have Dana sing the song. And because she said she didn't know. She was feeling odd with one of the songs. So we said, oh, well, let's hear you do it. And, you know, there were a couple of lines in it. She was right. And we changed them. I mean, they didn't quite fit her. It's like clothing. You want to get the clothing that's right for you. Same with the song. And you get it to come out of that person's mouth.
That's cool. Yeah, that's, so you're writing both the music and the lyrics.
Sometimes music and lyrics. Sometimes I personally do the whole thing. Sometimes I collaborate. I wrote a song recently with David Friedman, and Sharon and I wrote with lots of different people, a man named Ben Martini, who passed on some years ago now. But he was known in the New York circuit, and we wrote with different people. Collaborating is great. And I wrote a lot of songs with John Meyer also, who's an incredible songwriter.
Boy, you know, if I would have known, I was trying. I had been doing the publicity for the New York Sharks women's tackle football team
for
10 years, and trying to come up with a song, and I just couldn't get something. I mean, you know, every time I came up with an idea, the owner would say, "Nah, no, that's not good. It sounds like too much like a whatever." And I'm thinking, I have no idea. What the heck?
Wow.
And I left it alone.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm listening to you talk. I can hear you doing these songs. I really can. You've got that kind of, you know, fun in your voice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a sense of humor that's beyond.
Oh, God. I can't wait to hear you. Do you perform anywhere now?
No, I stopped performing. That's why I just, like, I'll do things, talk about stuff or you know, do something on the radio show. Or if there's a group, you know, like on a press trip, and I'm going to go, gee, these are boring people. I need to get their thumbs out of their ass. Oh, I think I'll do a scene from The Wizard of Oz. For
them. I love it. Great. That's great. Well, I was blessed when I was like in, you know, my teens and early 20s even. I fell in love with a writer named Tom Lehrer. We just loved him. And we had a great thing in high school and in camp. It started with me when I was like 8 years old in camp, Camp Rena in Palmer,
uh-huh.
Massachusetts. We had a thing called Sing. And in Sing, you'd write a theme piece that usually was a combination of lots of songs and put it in a topic. And they were parodies because you'd use other song melodies. And so that's where I started writing parodies. Most of my songs are not parodies now, but there were a couple of parodies. That Horowitz and Spector had a couple of parodies. Like we have To Be Lovely, which is great to write, by the way, with a musician that you never have to see and he doesn't have to judge you. But we wrote It Could Be Lovely, right, with Cole Porter we wrote it.
Tom Lehrer is the one with the wrote Vatican Rag?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one song I remembered.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just love Tom Lehrer. I hold your hand in mine, dear. I take it to my lips. I take a healthy bite of your dainty fingertips. Yeah, he was a Harvard professor, I understand. And I found out that a friend of mine actually dated him. I'm jealous. He was brilliant. But I always loved, and I was blessed that my parents took me to see Broadway shows when I was, I don't know how they let me in the theater, I was so young. But my father knew some of the theater owners, so they got me in. I don't think I was probably four when I saw Oklahoma.
Yeah,
and that wasn't my first show. I think I saw a thing about Edvard Grieg called, what was it, Strange Music in the Night was the song. But it was about Edvard Grieg. Kitty Carlisle was in it, I remember.
Kitty Carlisle. Wow. I met her.
Yeah, she's lovely. She used to live in my neighborhood when my son was growing up.
Yeah, I think it's... she had to do something part of the Queen's Council on the Arts. That's how...
Oh, great.
So we have to kind of do this, and then, you know, then I'm going to have you back.
Oh, great.
To talk about the song that you wrote.
Okay, now, do you want a parody or an original melody?
Whatever you think.
Okay. Right.
Whatever you think, it could be either. Actually, it would be probably more interesting on a original melody. This way, you're hearing two, you know.
Yeah, it would be yours.
Yeah, well, but you're also having two separate, I guess, talents of it.
If I collaborate, yeah, if I get another person to write the melody, that's a good idea. Well, how about this? Let's have conversations so that I could, you know, find out little, because it's those little things sometimes about people that, you know, about the show, these little special things that no other show has, which is great. I heard you talking to Steve Herbst. I'm a big fan of his.
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of traveling, so this is all started as a travel kind of thing. So I do a tremendous amount of traveling, and then I focus on entertainment and dining, food. Oh, I love food.
Oh, okay.
And the thing is, you know, people, I'm overweight only because it's the taste buds. You know,
oh, I help people with that too.
And I go, "Oh, this tastes good. I want more." You know, that's
I do
my
help
problem.
People with that too, though. I wrote a book on that. Actually, I'm going to send one to you. I'm going to gift you
one of the books.
By the way, the typical lines that I use when I was doing the nightclub act is one of them. I would say, people ask me if I come from Queens. I say, no, my folks are straight. And the other one is, which is, I changed my name to Exit because I want to see my name up in lights.
Those
were the two things I would have to do, like, because, like, when I would do my shows, I have to, like, I tried once trying to do the Wizard of Oz, like, right away, and it just didn't. You can't throw scenes from The Wizard of Oz immediately.
Oh, you have to get people into your sphere.
I need to warm it a little for people to know just a little bit, you know, that or I would tell people, I would do some, like, say, okay, let's do some jokes, you know, that not puns, what do you call those, you know, the groan jokes.
Oh.
You know,
right.
The ones that make you groan, you know.
Right.
So I would do a little series of that, and I would kind of end with, did you hear about the guy in college, he would run across the campus naked with the word desire written right across his chest. He was a streaker named Desire.
Oh, a streaker named Desire. Hey,
Desire.
That's good.
So what I would do is I would do that, and then I would say, okay, now we got the groans out, now let's go into the show. So I would, you know, do that kind of a thing.
Oh, my
and I had
God.
To be, but then what I would do with people, because it occurred to me as I'm doing my nightclub that maybe not everybody enjoys what I'm doing. You know, I'm doing, like, I do a whole imitation of Jerry Lewis.
Oh, how can you not love that? I don't
and
know anybody
do him,
that doesn't love Jerry Lewis.
I have him telling the story of Cinderella and spoonerisms.
Huh.
It's sick. It's really, you know.
Oh, no, that's true. No wonder Dana liked you.
So then what happens is I'm going through the show and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I need to, and I thought I'll do funny songs as well. And then toward the end of the show, I decide, let me just for the heck of it, I'm going to do Marique from Jacques Brel.
Oh, Marique, Marie.
I throw that in. It's like suddenly
that's
you're hearing a whole different voice
that's very
coming
cool,
out
though.
Of me. And I'm singing the song. And then I just kind of, I'm standing, you know, I think people are just like shocked.
But that's good. Shock and surprise is wonderful.
Yeah.
On stage. It's wonderful. That's what gets the attention. Oh, brilliant. And I've got a song I now realize I've got to send you. You don't have to use it. But
okay.
It's called Boiled Chicken.
Okay.
It's our dieting song.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, you'll have to, yeah.
I'll send you that one. That would be great.
Oh, that's cool. So, yeah, so we'll schmooze.
I'd love it. Schmoozing is very, very, well, schmoozing with you is joyful. I feel like I've known you for 20 years. And we're just meeting. You have that, which is wonderful. You just bring the people right in. I would think people who hear you for the first time feel like they've known you forever.
Well, you know what happens? People, I always get the same thing. I'm asking somebody, want to be my guest? And then they say to me, well, how long do I have to talk? I said, oh, I usually give you a minimum of half an hour. And they go, what? What am I going to talk about for half an hour? And I go, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Half an hour goes by, and they go, and I say, okay, so blah, blah, blah. And that's probably in their mind, they're going, did a half an hour go by?
It's terrific, because I'm a kid from Brooklyn, so we always talked a lot in Brooklyn.
You know, I mean, you know, so I can get people and tell me, relax, it's a phone call.
Right.
It's really, that's what it really is. You got on the phone, I got on the phone, and we're schmoozing.
Yeah, but you make
does
people
it sound
very
like we're on the radio? No.
Oh, that's terrific.
So, yeah, well, I'm going to end the show in a few minutes. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's time already. Look at that.
My God. That was fast. It's like this year. I mean, I'm going to my son's Christmas show in about 2 weeks, and I feel like I've just came from it last year.
Yeah, I know. It's, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. Every time my birthday comes up, then I go, did I get a year older? Or, no, the worst part. The worst part is when I haven't seen somebody for a while, and they're exactly my age, and I go, and I see the person, I'm going, am I that old?
You don't sound
old. Do I look
old?
That old?
You don't sound old. There's no such thing as old anymore.
No, I know. It's just that.
When I was a kid, my age was that I am now was considered old, but not anymore.
Oh, yeah, I know. Isn't it funny? Because I think back. No, the worst part, when somebody young is going, call me ma'am.
Okay.
Right. I'm like, well, ma'am? How do you call me that young ma'am? And I forget, oh, wait a minute. I'm not 18 anymore.
Oh, when the bus driver doesn't question you when you put the senior pass in.
No, no, that'll be next. That will be next.
No, I've been in my senior pass for many years now.
Oh. I'm just hitting that part.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it. I am really fine with it. You know, it gets better. It really does, Merle. It gets better and better. I love it. I like my age.
Well, I'm going to take advantage of the fact that they said because when you're old, you can say whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. And you get this guy.
Oh, well, she's old. You know? We can't. We have to, you know, apologize for her. You know, she's old.
Oh, I have another song to send you. Yeah, I just realized I have the song Never a Freshman Again.
Okay.
That I wrote about the joys of getting older, the joys of being a senior.
So do you want to, when you send me this, how do you do it? Like email
well, by
it?
Email.
Or
I can email an MP3 of it.
Okay, that's good because I'm going, oh, I don't know, is it put it on the CD or MP3?
No, I'll just send an MP3 if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, that works
yeah,
for me.
That's easy.
That'd be good. Great. Well, it was great having you, and we'll follow up on this, and this would be cool.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait to have lunch with you.
Oh, we'll schmooze. Don't
we'll
worry.
Schmooze. Okay, great.
Okay, great speaking with you, and have a great evening.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Goodbye, Bobby.
Bye.
Oh, yes. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to end the show. This will be really cool. This will be quite interesting to see, to hear what she decides to write. So, okay, everybody. So, yes, where is my thing? Yes. So, until the next show, I think, what's coming up? I think I'm going to be doing something, for the holidays, yeah. New Wave. I have there's a different new chef, I understand, at New Wave Oven. And so we're going to talk about how to cook for the holidays using the New Wave. You know how I push it. I mean, everybody needs to have one of these, honest to goodness. But anyway, so. Until then, have a great morning, afternoon, evening, or whatever it is. Yeah, and happy.